So, hello everyone. Hello. So, I left off when it came to the surrogate and client interactions. So, this is what I was saying. I'll reread it a little bit, then I'll finish the rest. It says, learning how to develop healthy relationships, how to touch and to receive touch, and how to be more accepting of one's body and sexuality are important aspects of this process. Now, I want to say that, give new commentary here, sexuality has ebbs and flows, eroticism has ebbs and flows, and sensuality has ebbs and flows. One day you feel sitting on top of the world. One day you feel like you're sitting ducks. And the other day you just feel okay, C+. So that is something more common for people like myself who are recovering from devastations and tribulations. We're more sensitized to it than most people, because we have more of a need for sexually sorting out what is sexually meant and what is sexually felt than the majority of the humans in our society. It says, care is taken to ensure that the client is ready for each new step as the client and surrogate partner gradually progress through experiences that are simultaneously diagnostic, skill building, and healing. Sex is a relationship builder, a skill builder. And sex deserves correct diagnosis. Eroticism deserves correct diagnosis. Eroticism is a skill builder, and eroticism is a relationship builder. Sensuality deserves its correct diagnoses, and sensuality is a skill builder. Sensuality is also a relationship builder. And the healing part is already self-explanatory. It says, the surrogate partner models social skills, effective communication, emotional honesty. So, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this. There are life skills within sex, eroticism, and sensuality. Let's talk about them. So eroticism requires wholesome attitudes. Eroticism requires emotional intelligence. Eroticism requires emotional literacy. Eroticism requires emotional self-regulation. Eroticism requires gelotology. Eroticism requires hope theory. Eroticism requires impermanence. Eroticism requires kindness. Eroticism requires empathy. Eroticism requires life skills-based education. Eroticism requires moral development. Eroticism requires people skills. Eroticism requires personal boundaries. Eroticism requires professional boundaries. Eroticism requires positive psychology. Eroticism requires RULER, the acronym, which means that the five key emotions skills of eroticism are recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating erotic emotions. Eroticism requires social intelligence. Eroticism requires social skills. Eroticism requires soft skills. Eroticism requires study skills. Eroticism requires a theory of multiple intelligences. And eroticism requires vocational skills. Now, let's go to sensuality. Sensuality requires wholesome attitudes. Sensuality requires emotional intelligence. Sensuality requires emotional literacy. Sensuality requires emotional self-regulation. Sensuality requires gelatology. Sensuality requires hope theory. Sensuality requires impermanence. Sensuality requires kindness. Sensuality requires empathy. Sensuality requires life skills-based education. Sensuality requires moral development. Sensuality requires people skills. Sensuality requires personal boundaries. Sensuality requires professional boundaries. Sensuality requires positive psychology. Sensuality requires the acronym RULER. Sensuality requires the five key emotion skills of sensuality, which are recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating sensual emotions. Sensuality requires social intelligence. Sensuality requires social skills. Sensuality requires soft skills. Sensuality requires study skills. Sensuality requires a theory of multiple intelligences. And sensuality requires vocational skills. And next, sex requires wholesome attitudes. Sex requires emotional intelligence. Sex requires emotional literacy. Sex requires emotional self-regulation. Sex requires gelatology. Sex requires hope theory. Sex requires impermanence. Sex requires kindness. Sex requires empathy. Sex requires life skills-based education. Sex requires moral development. Sex requires people skills. Sex requires personal boundaries. Sex requires professional boundaries. Sex requires positive psychology. Sex requires RULER acronym. Sex requires the five key emotion skills of sex, which are recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating sexual emotions. Sex requires social intelligence. Sex requires social skills. Sex requires soft skills. Sex requires study skills. Sex requires a theory of multiple intelligences. And sex requires vocational skills. That's my commentary on that. Actually, there's more. Emotional honesty is required in sex, eroticism, and sensuality. Effective communication is what sex, eroticism, and sensuality require. Here we go. It says the surrogate-client relationship offers experiences of shared physical intimacy that facilitate the development of healthy self-concepts and improve sexual functioning. We also, and my commentary is, we also need improved sensual functioning. We also need improved erotic functioning. Sex requires healthy self-concepts. Eroticism requires healthy self-concepts. And sensuality requires healthy self-concepts. But let's take it a step further. Sex, eroticism, and sensuality require healthy concepts of each other. Then it says, as the work progresses, clients find themselves becoming more relaxed, more open to feelings, and more comfortable with physical and emotional intimacy. Sex, eroticism, and sensuality require emotional intimacy. Sex, eroticism, and sensuality require physical intimacy. Sex, eroticism, and sensuality require being relaxed, sex, eroticism, sensuality require openness to feelings. And sex, eroticism, and sensuality require robust comfort. It says genital contact may or may not be therapeutically indicated. When it is indicated, it is often a minor part of the therapy. What's my views on that? Here we go. And this is really simple. So, sex, eroticism, and sensuality require decision-making skills, problem-solving skills, creative thinking skills, lateral thinking skills, critical thinking skills, interpersonal skills, self-awareness skills, assertiveness techniques, equanimity skills, resiliency skills, and managing and coping with emotions and managing coping with stress skills. Sex, eroticism, sensuality require financial literacy, substance abuse prevention, literacy skills, numeracy skills, transversal skills, citizenship skills, lifelong learning, professional development, personal development. Humor skills, healthy control of situations, releasing tension as well as frustration, and sex, eroticism, and sensuality require emotional life skills as well. So psychosocial competency is what sex, eroticism, and sensuality require. That's my commentary. It says surrogate and client attachment. From the surrogate's point of view, most progress seems to occur during therapy when human caring and affection flow easily between surrogate partners and clients. In the context of this authentic connection, clients' issues about emotional sexual intimacy can be explored, and the client has opportunities for practicing and developing new relationship skills. So relationship skills are part of sex, eroticism, and sensuality. And what I was able to learn about my past is, this is the last episode where I mentioned my sexual past. It's very appropriate for this episode. From what I do remember is that there were times where myself and especially autism moms, we would say to each other, I can't help it, meaning our out of this galaxy central attraction and erotic attraction to one another. And we would both even say, we're not going to even try to help it. We would say these things at the same time. That's what simultaneously means. And we said that because there were times where I would leave their homes, or they'll say, Antonio, I'll see you tomorrow. They were trying to escort me out because, you know, kids, bedtime, that type of thing. And we would resist leaving because it was like, well, I don't want to go home sexually frustrated. I don't want to go home with the sexual tension that I can't sleep. We would admit these things to each other. It was like sometimes we would say that and then we would look at each other for quite some time with this magnetic eye contact. And what we would do was, sometimes the kids were in the home. So, and some of them lived in large homes, so we would go to the very end of their homes and have sex. We were very wise with keeping our volume down and keeping our lovemaking noises down, you know. It was just like, the kids never walked in on us. They never came to our door. Because we were at one end of the homes where the kids normally didn't want to go, didn't care to go. So that's where we went. Now, when it came to their the other autism moms' mid-sized homes or even their apartments, what we would do is only have sex when the kids were not in the home. So when we would look at each other like that, the kids were with their nannies, you know, the nannies would have them, you know, hanging out with the nannies for the day because the autism moms were very busy. But they were like, well, I'm not going to be too busy to be intimate with Antonio. So I remember times where we would say to each other, we would say to each other, once you're in this house, The only way you can leave this house is if you share your dick with me. And they wanted me to talk to them like this. They were like, well, because that's what turned them on. They didn't really want to say penis or testicles. They're like, no, we gonna, when we're alone like this, we use adult language. They said the only way you're gonna leave is if you share your dick and balls with me. Because you can't leave me to have this sexual pent up sensations inside me. And so they looked at me, it was my turn to talk, and they said, okay, in order for you to leave this house, you have to share your pussy, your clit with me. And they were turned on by that. They're like, wow, I love that, you know, you have this poetic way with vocabulary. They appreciated that I reciprocated in that way. And that was the rule. So if once I left on time, it's because that they experienced this sexual afterglow before, during, after sex along with me. So that's what happened in my past. Because we would hold on to each other before any of us would turn to leave. And we knew why. So we would, when the kids were gone, we would make a mid-level of noise and sounds and have sex. The neighbors weren't really there like that, so we would pick the right times to have sex. That was our mentalities at the time. Wow. And the kids never heard us. No neighbor ever came to us and told us they heard us. We never got a note slipped under their home door to say they heard us. Nobody, to my knowledge, ever came to us. Nobody came to their families. Nobody came to their friends. Nobody came to anybody in our lives to say, hey, this is what happened. The kids were in a deep sleep, so. And when the kids were gone, we were still thoughtful of other people. And of course, we made sure to use all the proper precautions to keep ourselves sexually healthy. It says, even personal conflict between the partners provides excellent opportunities for learning. The surrogate client relationship serves as a model of every stage of relationship from beginning to end. The surrogate partner's responses to the client and perception of the client from inside this relationship can be highly informative for the therapeutic team. So, what that has taught me is it's so important that we understand that sex eroticism and sensuality requires inner life gentleness, outer life gentleness, inner life generosity, outer life generosity, for sure. We can now go to the next. It says, from the client's point of view, clients grow to trust and care for the surrogate partners with whom they share honesty, intimacy, and meaningful emotional work. Let me make it clear. Sex, eroticism, and sensuality do require meaningful emotional work, meaningful intimacy, meaningful honesty. Then it says, through this genuine relationship, clients experience themselves in intimacy in valuable new ways. In my commentaries, all the ways have to be wholesome and healthy. It says, clients learn how to develop trust-satisfying relationships. Sex, eroticism, and sensuality do require sane trust and sensible satisfaction. Sex is its own relationship. Eroticism is its own relationship. And sensuality is its own relationship. Then it says they are able to see that the same potential exists for their future relationships. Sex, eroticism, sensuality does have a past, a present, and a future, a legacy. Their own temporalness and their own eternalness as well. It says eventually clients reach a point where they feel ready to begin new relationships with partners of their own choosing. This is one of the reasons why I dare say that mainstream porn should have co-stars of their own choosing by the other porn performers. Because feminist and ethical porn, that those are requirements. You have to choose your co-stars, your scene partners. You have to choose who I'm going to have sex with for camera money, because that's what porn is. And sex etiquette therapy, it's more of, in real life, people choose their partners to have sex with. So it should be no different with surrogate partner therapy. Because if you don't have a choice, you don't have healing. If you have a choice, you have flavorful healing. It says when therapy ends, the decision to end therapy is made mutually between client, therapist, surrogate partner when the revised goals of therapy have been met. The process of bringing the therapy and the surrogate-client relationship to a close celebrates the uniqueness of each relationship, honors the feelings of the members that try, and directs attention towards the client's future. I feel like for me, it is very important to have these conversations. Because a lot of times so many people think these thoughts, but they're afraid. While for me, I'm no longer afraid. I was taught to be, but I figured, hey, there's so many people that need surrogate partner therapy, those in the secular world and faith-based institutions, and I'm not dissing anybody's views on religion. You'd be amazed at how many houses of worship, how many secular institutions people think about, man, I need surrogate partner therapy. So that's why I'm starting a conversation to let people know it's okay to go. So I'ma just read what's important. Once y'all feel like y'all get the point, I usually stop the episodes. So it says, let's focus on choosing a surrogate. Selecting a surrogate partner, it's important to consider who will be most useful to the client's learning, and then to interview and select a professional surrogate partner with the necessary expertise for that specific case. Experience level, physical appearance, and age vary among surrogates. Physical appearance and age are usually the least important criteria when selecting a surrogate partner. It is often desirable to avoid meeting the client's ideal in order to provide optimal learning for the client about real relationships with real people. High quality training and emotional maturity are essential features of a professional surrogate partner. Supervising therapists may contact the IPSA's referrals coordinator for assistance in finding a compassionate, well-trained professional surrogate partner. So that would be who and what I am. And I say that because I would be able to bring in demographics of people that are normally not within the surrogate partner therapy world. And for myself, I figured out that a lot of people don't know how sex, erotic sensuality really work. Because many people are saying, I no longer want to just daydream about this. I want this to be real life action for me. And there's so many people that need my help to define sex for themselves, define eroticism for themselves, and define sensuality for themselves. Because then when you have your sex partner, eroticism partner, sensual partner, y'all can agree to define sex together. We can agree to define eroticism together. We can agree to define sensuality together, because we do influence and shape each other's views on sex, eroticism, and sensuality. It says, IPSA certified surrogate partner to assist the therapeutic community and consumers in evaluating the qualifications of individuals offering surrogate partner therapy. IPSA established a certification program to qualify for IPSA certification. Surrogate partners must demonstrate that they have had adequate training, understand the principles and practice of surrogate partner therapy, possess personal qualities commensurate with the large responsibilities of a surrogate partner, and commit to honoring the IPSA Code of Ethics. Those are all self-explanatory. We already went through these things. And just know that I'm going to prove a point. You can survive violence as a child and an adult and still be a sensitive sex partner, still be a sensitive erotic partner, still be a sensitive sensual partner. I'm living proof of that. It says, intern surrogate partners. You already know that's going to be me. Let's give you more details. Trainees who successfully complete the first phase of training are approved to begin working as intern surrogate partners. Interns work with real clients, closely collaborate with each client's therapist, and prepare for a review every session with an experienced surrogate partner mentor. Interns are providing benefits to clients while continuing their learning through these real-world experiences. While there are some cases that are too complex for a new intern, many cases are appropriate for intern surrogate partners. IPSA training staff and mentors help evaluate cases to determine whether an intern has sufficient experience and skills to successfully assist each client. Well, okay, I'll read and then I'll comment. It says, confirmation of a specific surrogate partner's training, certification, and good standing IPSA can be verified through IPSA membership committee or the IPSA referrals coordinator. You may also consult our list of IPSA certified surrogate partners. I feel like I want to explain this. Some intercourse is not always happening between the surrogate partner and the client. I mean, full-blown intercourse doesn't always happen between the surrogate partner and the client, but when the client needs full-blown intercourse between themselves and the surrogate partner, yes, we take all the sexual precautions, all the sexual cautions to safeguard each other's sexual health. And it has to be approved of by the IPSA, as well as the client's therapist. So, full-blown intercourse doesn't take the majority of the time together, but it does happen only when the client needs it. So, sometimes with my clients, I may have to do that. And I'm fully comfortable with that, because no one is being taken advantage of. There's no conflicts of interest. There's no doormatting. There's no being a pushover. There's nobody being ran over or walked over. And there's no treachery at all. Here we go. It says the character of a surrogate partner. Although there are no specific academic degrees required of a surrogate partner, there are certain personal qualities and life experiences that seem to provide a valuable foundation for surrogate partner skills. These include intelligence. I have that. Compassion. I have that. Warmth. I have that. Comfort sharing one's own body. I definitely have that. Comfort sharing one's sexuality. I mean, how more blunt, honest can I be about that part of me? Empathy, have it. Patience, have it. Knowledge of sex therapy principles and practices. I am extremely comfortable with that part of myself, obviously speaking. And good communication skills. I got that down pat. It says non-judgmental attitudes towards sexual orientation. Y'all already know that's me. Non-judgmental attitudes towards choice of lifestyle. For the second time, you already know that's me. And non-judgmental attitudes towards consensual sexual activities are also highly important. Y'all already really truly know that's me. I can keep going. It says gender and sexual orientation. Surrogate partners work with clients of all sexual orientations and genders. I approve of that message. Gender and sexual orientation are often a consideration when the client's difficulties present at the intersection of emotional intimacy and sexuality, and the intention of the therapy is to create experiential learning at that intersection. Let me tell you this. Sex requires intersectionality, eroticism requires intersectionality, and sensuality requires intersectionality. I'm so thankful that I have been educating myself before I submit myself to something, because I'm reading my sexual past to myself. That's why I'm very much invested in this empathic endeavor. It says some clients choose to begin working with a surrogate who participates as a role model or coach rather than as an intimate partner, especially when the client is primarily addressing negative body image, intense phobias, history of sexual trauma, or when a surrogate partner of a desired gender and sexual orientation is not available in the client's location. Here's what I say. Well, for some clients, I'm a professional intimate partner, and for other clients, I'll be a professional role model and a professional coach. So, okay, I feel like it says, this will be the last one I read, because after this, it can't get any clearer. It says, fees and length of therapy, local therapy. The client typically sees the surrogate therapist each once a week in 1 to 2 hour sessions until the 3-person team decides that therapy is completed. An average course of surrogate partner therapy includes at least 30 hours with a surrogate partner. So, there's nothing more to say on that. It says intensive therapy structured to accommodate clients who do not have access to a local surrogate partner therapy. In intensive surrogate partner therapy, the client sees the therapist and the surrogate partner on a daily basis for a predetermined length of time, usually 10 to 14 days. I know for some people, the therapy can last weeks, months, years. It says, fees. Fees vary based on a variety of factors, including the surrogate's level of experience, geographic location, and format of the therapy. Clients working with local surrogates and therapists generally pay these professionals by the hour. Surrogate partner fees are similar to the average hourly fee of therapists in the same geographic area. In the USA, these generally range from $75 to $200 per hour. Sessions may last 1 to 3 hours depending on the therapy format and agreements between members of the therapeutic triad. Each session with a local surrogate partner typically lasts 1 to 2 hours. Clients pay their local therapist directly. In some cases, a portion of the therapist's fees is covered by medical insurance. Fees for intensive therapy generally collected at the beginning of the intensive process based on the agreed upon expected number of therapy hours the client will have with the surrogate partner and therapist during the intensive. If additional hours are needed, they are paid at the time of the service. So, intensive therapy programs, list of prices, I mean, that's about it. No, you know what? My last one should be finding a therapist. I'll read that part. So when it comes to finding a therapist, here we go. It says, now this is the last part because this explains everything. Does IPSA refers clients to therapists who have expertise in surrogate partner therapy? Please contact the IPSA referral coordinator to request a referral in your area. Because there are many parts of the world that do not have experts in surrogate partner therapy, IPSA offers the following additional suggestions for locating therapists in your area who specialize in treating clients with sexual concerns and difficulties with intimate relationships. Once you reach a therapist by phone or email, it is perfectly acceptable to interview them about their education, experience, methods of treatment, fees, and whether they work with surrogate partners. Wow. This is awesome. This is all awesome. It says some ways to find therapists. One, look online and in local directories for counseling, psychology, psychotherapy, marriage counseling, sex therapy, and sexuality counseling. Some therapist listings will indicate a specialty in sex therapy. This may be a good indicator of special knowledge, but not all advertisements are honest or complete. Not all therapists with training in human sexuality advertise as sex therapists. You do not need to restrict yourself to only calling therapists who mention sex therapy. It is in your best interest, however, to inquire about the therapist's experience and training regarding the types of concerns you wish to address in therapy. As an example, psychologytoday.com. Allows you to reach for therapists in your region and filter by their areas of specialty, types of insurance they accept, language spoken, etc. Surrogate partner therapy is not one of the filter options. 2. Request referrals to therapists and counselors in your area from organizations whose members are sex therapists and counselors. When making your request, be sure to mention that IPSA can recommend that you contact them. Mention the larger cities in your vicinity and/or the larger towns/cities to which you are willing to travel for therapy. Some sex therapist organizations, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, AASECT, the Society Sex Therapy Research, SSTAR, the American Board of Sexology. I'm just thinking about how I'm glad this episode really fully breaks down how everything operates. And I really think about how I wouldn't be surprised if I have colleagues in the AASECT and the SSTAR and the American Board of Sexology. I think they would really appreciate me. Knowing me, I would make an excellent certified sex coach. I would make an excellent sex therapist. I would make an excellent sexologist. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Antonio, I'll help pay for you to get your certifications and degrees in these things. I'm like, well, since you're helping me, I'm going to go for it. It says, not all therapists are willing to work with surrogate partners. And only a few parts of the world have local surrogate partners. If you believe that working with a surrogate partner will be the best therapeutic option for you, ask the therapist you contact. Do they work with surrogate partners, sometimes called sex surrogates, too? Are they open to working with you and a surrogate partner? If they agree, this is an appropriate course of treatment for you. IPSA provides consultation and education for therapists if they prefer to learn more before deciding. 3, are they aware of any IPSA certified surrogate partners working in your area? If they're not open to working with you and a surrogate partner, you can ask whether they are able to provide a referral to other therapists who work with surrogate partners. Note, it is not uncommon for uninformed people, including uninformed therapists, to assume that there is something unethical/illegal about surrogate partner therapy. Despite their good intentions, these assumptions are almost always incorrect. If you find a local therapist who is willing to supervise your work with a professional surrogate partner, IPSA can provide them with referrals to IPSA-certified surrogate partners or IPSA interns residing in your area or who are willing to travel to your area to work with you and your local therapist. The IPSA referral coordinator and some IPSA members are willing to consult with therapists who want to learn more about surrogate partner therapy. IPSA can also help to coordinate an intensive therapy program for you in a different location. See the IPSA intensive therapy for more information about those options. See, pretty much understand why I'm so into this. And an IPSA has been recognized as the leading authority in sex surrogacy, surrogate partner therapy since 1973. Just want to put that in. And of course, they're pretty much, they regulate themselves very well. Important note, at no point is the therapist watching directly involved with what's happening between the partner, surrogate, and the client. Clients meet with their surrogate partner separately. And the therapist and the partner surrogate green light to talk one another about their progress. The purpose of all this, to give the client a safe space to explore and practice intimacy and sex in a structured environment. Breath work, touch, mindfulness, relaxation, exercise is a part of what I'll be doing with them. This helps out with feeling comfortable with dating too. And of course, this is for trauma and abuse survivors, folks with little or no sexual experience, penis owners with erectile dysfunction, early ejaculation, vulva owners with vaginismus, or other pelvic floor dysfunction that may make penetrative intercourse painful. Wow. People struggle with body acceptance and body dysmorphia. People have anxiety or fear specifically around sex, intimacy, and touch. Folks with disabilities that make it more challenging to have sex. Wow. So I'm labeled with autism, so the folks with disabilities part, that includes me. pelvic floor dysfunction that may make penetrative intercourse painful. That happened to me on rare occasions in my sex life, and my past partners helped me to overcome that. Early ejaculation, that happened sometimes in my past sex life, but not for very long. It happened for a little bit, then it stopped because my past partners worked with me to overcome that. Okay, to sum it up, the first meeting happens in the sex therapist's office, but all subsequent meetings happen elsewhere, usually in the surrogate's office or the client's home. A good fit isn't determined by things like how attractive you are to the surrogate, but rather by feeling like you can eventually can trust them. From there, the client and partner surrogate will meet to determine whether or not it's a good fit. And many partner surrogates have online social media platforms, so if you stumble on a partner surrogate you think might be a good fit for you, bring it up with your sex therapist. But to actually work with that particular partner surrogate, both your sex therapist and the partner surrogate will have to sign off. So those things are important. So I'll be doing with my future clients, making eye contact, meditation, sensate focuses, breathing exercises, body mapping, one-way or mutual nudity, one or two-way touch, intercourse guided by safer sex practices. There isn't always or even usually intercourse between a partner surrogate and the client, but when there is, we focus on building intimate foundation first. Like I said, we work together once a week or so until the client reaches their goals. Once a client has reached their goals, we have a few closing sessions and send them off into the real world. Sex therapy is talk therapy, so it's not the same thing as sex therapy. While clients may occasionally have hands-on homework, for example, masturbating, watching porn, and making a yes-no-maybe list, we also have to understand that sex therapy is the type of therapy that helps an individual or couple deconstruct negative messages and experiences in order to help them build toward optimum sexual relationship health. There may be some overlap, but surrogate partner therapy isn't sex therapy. There are no hands-on interactions between the sex therapist and the client. Surrogate partner therapy is when a sex therapist calls on another expert or certified surrogate partner therapist to be physically, sexually, and romantically intimate with their client outside of the sex therapy sessions. Let me make this clear. Our sex surrogate sex workers, while we support sex workers, you know I do, we don't consider ourselves sex workers. We consider ourselves adjunct therapists and healers. Sometimes there are essential sexual things involved in sex therapy, but the goal is healing, not necessarily sexual release or pleasure. But if sexual release and sexual pleasure happens, we're happy. Going to a sex worker is like going to a fancy restaurant. You choose what you want to eat from a menu, and if you like what you ate, you'll come back again. Working with a sex surrogate partner is like taking a cooking class. You go, you learn, then you take what you've learned, and you go home and cook a meal for someone else. So I'm thankful for Sharon Cohen Green and Mark Shattuck, a partner surrogate media chair of the IPSA, for breaking these things down. So now I can talk to you the rest off the top of my head. So when I look at what happened to me in my life, my sexual past prepared me for sex surrogate partner therapy. Even if I didn't have the sexual past, I would still be prepared for sex surrogate partner therapy. I was going to go in that direction anyway. My childhood, to some extent, prepared me for sex surrogate partner therapy. even without that childhood, I would still be prepared for sex therapy, partner therapy. And not to gross anybody out and say childhood, but we all know what happened in it. And a lot of, let's just say, the people in organized crime need sex surrogate partner therapy. The narcissistic sexual abuse, narcissistic erotic abuse, and narcissistic sexual abuse I saw growing up answers that question directly. And when I think about how, in closing, and I have nothing else to say about my sexual past, now I'm just focus on the sex surrogate partner part. When I think about how important it is for me to do sex surrogate partner therapy, I call it erotic education. The process of direct erotic learning. It's erotic schooling, erotic study, erotic training, erotic direction, erotic instruction, erotic guidance, erotic apprenticeship, erotic teaching, erotic coaching, erotic tutelage, erotic learning, erotic reading, erotic discipline, erotic preparation, erotic adult education, erotic book learning, erotic information, erotic knowledge acquired through erotic education, erotic cultivation, erotic background. I don't see it as erotic indoctrination. I absolutely don't see it as erotic brainwashing. But I can also say this. It's sensual education, the process of directing sensual learning, sensual schooling, sensual study, sensual training, sensual direction, sensual instruction, sensual guidance, sensual apprenticeship, sensual teaching, sensual coaching, sensual tutelage, sensual learning, sensual reading, sensual discipline, sensual preparation, sensual adult education, sensual book learning, sensual information, no sensual indoctrination, no sensual brainwashing, sensual cultivation, yes, sensual background, yes, sensual rearing, yes, like erotic rearing, yes, and sensual knowledge acquired through sensual education. And to end, it's sexual education, the process of directing sexual learning, sexual schooling, sexual studies, sexual training, sexual direction, sexual instruction, sexual guidance, sexual apprenticeship, sexual teaching, sexual coaching, sexual tutelage, sexual learning, sexual reading, sexual discipline, sexual preparation, sexual adult education, sexual book learning, sexual information, no sexual indoctrination, no sexual brainwashing, yes, sexual cultivation, yes, sexual background, yes, sexual rearing, and sexual knowledge acquired through sexual education. When I also want to say, when I talk about this, is that many people don't understand with the brain the sexual reward system, the erotic reward system, and the central reward system of the brain. And for me, sexual vulnerability, erotic vulnerability, sensual vulnerability overcomes sexual invulnerability, erotic invulnerability, and sensual invulnerability. Another thing I want to tell y'all is this, as I wind down. The IPSA has never been sued. Many people know they exist in for me, I don't see why it would, because we live in a world where a lot of people are erotically repressed, sensually repressed, sensually depressed, erotically depressed, you know. In other words, sensually repressed, erotically repressed, erotically depressed, sensually depressed, right? And then erotically stressed, sensually stressed, erotically obsessed, sensually obsessed, not feeling sensually blessed, not feeling erotically blessed. And a lot of people are in need of erotic confessions and sensual confessions. A lot of people are in need of sensual lessons and erotic lessons. A lot of people feel like, I need erotic testings and sensual testings. Many people are just tired of the feeling like they're in an erotic torture chamber. They're tired to feel like they're in a sensual torture chamber too. They want erotic paradise and sensual paradise without having to die to experience it. So, my being sex surrogate partner means that I honor Black sensuality, Black eroticism, autism sensuality, autism eroticism, rainbow sensuality, rainbow eroticism, and abuse survivor eroticism, and abuse survivor sensuality too. And then I look at how, in closing, I say this. Black sexuality, autism sexuality, rainbow sexuality, abuse survivor sexuality are very much needed in the sex surrogate partner therapy world. And so I make it clear that even though I'm marginalized when it comes to my race, my sexuality, what happened to me as a child, and disability, I can still be a cathartic, therapeutic, intimate sex, sexuality, eroticism partner. Okay, I do have something real quick to say about my sexual past. So, most of the women I was with were cisgender heterosexual women. Some were LGBTQI plus women. So, I didn't have a problem with them being with other women and men. And they didn't have a problem with me being with other women and men. So we knew that we were sexually fluid, gender fluid. It never bothered anybody. And were they ever intimate with non-binary adults? Yes, was I? At least 4 to 5 of them. So we knew all that about each other, and there were no secrets. And pretty much they all knew of each other. Sometimes they all met with each other. I'm talking about all my sex partners. So nobody was kept a secret, and nothing was kept a secret. We left nothing unsaid when it came to each other individually and collectively. That ends my sexual past talk for good. And I can honestly say that everyone, all adult parties involved, got along just fine with me, with everybody else, with each other. And that is the entire, complete, unvarnished truth.